Public school districts were just reopening in full at the onset of the 2021-22 school year. And I was also spending time in a number of high schools that provided resources for students with unstable housing situations. In these contexts, I was meeting some of the vast numbers of unsheltered families with school-aged children in one of the epicenters of America's ongoing housing crisis. The disaster of homelessness in Los Angeles and many other cities is often reduced in news reports as well as in common conversation to a binary, housed or unhoused. Some descriptive gradations exist, episodic, chronic, hidden, but even those modest systemic efforts toward nuance tend to fold into the dominant presumption that most people who end up without shelter do so as a result of drug addiction, mental health challenges, and general shortcomings of competence. The country's influential privileged class, policymakers, and news outlets together propagate this terribly facile framing of what homelessness is and whom it afflicts. In contrast, this project began with parents who worked and children who went to school, people of sound mind and without substance issues, who carried the typical kinds of aspirations that parents and children have, yet who could not always manage to remain housed in the neighborhoods where they lived. These voices and journeys are rarely put forward in the media, in part because of the media's bias toward the grimmest narratives, in part due to valid fears of the systems in place to help. And I sought to learn how adults and youth in these situations define themselves, meet the demands of day-to-day American life, sustain dreams, and bear the unique psychic load that each carries across a stark socioeconomic line drawn by others. That is how I encountered the individuals who trusted me to tell their stories. The majority of our conversations took place in a small nonprofit organization's office over a period of more than 2 years. Sometimes we walked and talked outside or sat in local parks. Frequently, we drove to a certain setting where a segment of the story occurred or to meet with other people, such as educators and social workers, who had insights to share. I recorded most of these conversations with permission. Nearly all the physical spaces described, including specific street corners and motel rooms, were visited in person. Memory is subjective and malleable, especially when terror and trauma are involved. Many events in this narrative could be cross-checked to a degree with others who were present, some could not. The same holds true for dialogue. The same holds true for descriptions of interior feelings that may have changed over time and reflection. Primary participants were given access to the manuscript before publication as a method to further authenticate the writing, to affirm their comfort with the story's structure and style, and to aid an author who does not share their heritage, race, class, or very many experiential threads at all. Some surnames have been omitted, and some names and identifying characteristics have been changed to protect privacy.
Part 1. Monterey Park. Evelyn and her family. August to September, 2018. They live near the boundary, where the city gives way to the high desert. The landscape unfolding into the northeasterly distance is brown and dry and unending, while the compact front yards along the curve of their street remain an impossible green, courtesy of the state's vast system of water conveyance. Evelyn holds one end of the bed frame and walks in choppy steps forward along the short driveway. Manny holds the other end and walks backward. "Hold up, wait. I need to put it down for a sec," she says. Manny continues backpedaling, yanking her along. "It's like 10 more steps," he says. Evelyn abruptly stops and drops her end of the frame. The wood scrapes on the concrete. She begins shaking out her cramping fingers. Manny sets his end down and makes a performance of crouching to inspect underneath for scratches. "Who cares?" she asks preemptively. "We're